And it's absolutely fantastic to be with you. It is 36 minutes after 7. A very good morning to you. As you've heard, Wabongile Ganzelenzele standing in for Sarah J. On 072-567-1567. Looking forward to getting your voice notes, your text messages. And the reason for that is Saturday morning on the Weekend Breakfast. We focus on areas of wellness, health, relationships, mental health, career, home. And it's all about practicing healthy habits to attain better physical and mental health outcomes. It is the first Saturday of the month, that is December, which means it's time for our regular Q&A with Dr. Charl van Loggerenburg, who joins us now on the line from Johannesburg. Doc, good morning to you. Thank you so very much for joining us.
Hey there, good morning. Great to chat again.
Doc, we've been getting some messages on this, so we're going to start with those messages, and then I have some of my messages that we'll chat about a bit later on. But I hear, Doc, that you were invigilating today.
Yeah, getting some exams started. You know, no rest for the students, right? So you find a quiet gap in their schedule, and they're writing exams on a Saturday morning. But everyone's arrived with their pens and pencils and all started off, so we've got time to chat.
So it's a Saturday in December and you are writing an exam. You're unfair. We must take this matter to Parliament, Doc. It's unfair.
It's about available time. You know, there's the diary. I always say you need a good chiropractor for your diary because there's just not enough spaces to fill, right?
My, I hear you. Doc, let's get down to business. Coming in on the WhatsApp line, Zuki says, please ask the doctor about salivary gland stones. What causes them? How can they be prevented and treated?
Yeah, that's a great, interesting question. So the real story here, so you've got a number of little glands in your, think of it like in your cheek and in the mouth structure, and these little glands produce the saliva, the soft fluid that helps to start the digesting process of your food. And if there's an imbalance in the salt and chemicals that are in that saliva, then there's a tendency for stones to be produced. So you imagine it should normally stay fluid, but very often it's a diet-related issue. And sometimes it can be a local infection, for example, or an underlying medical condition that can predispose you to forming stones. You know, we get stones in other parts of the body where we don't want them. Think, for example, of gallstones in the gallbladder. Same kind of logic where normally it should be a fluid, and then if there's a disturbance in metabolism, we get the stone. So how to prevent it? Quite tricky, actually, because often the first time you know about it is when there's a diagnosis. So if this person has had a diagnosis, chat to your doctor, check that it's not an underlying medicine that you're on from a side effect point of view, and see whether there's a nutrition strategy that you can follow to try and reduce the risk of those stones forming in the future.
If you've just joined the conversation, I want to remind you that this is your chance to get some free advice where you send in your questions via text as we chat to Dr. Charl, who joins you because it's the first Saturday of the month, which means you will have a Q&A with him. Any medical condition goes, send us that WhatsApp message on 072-567-1567. Doc, another one coming in from Jenny in Komiki, who says that I have burning toes from time to time, which is becoming worse. I am 76 years old. I had colon cancer and chemotherapy 11 years ago. GPs have said it's vitamin B deficiency. I've had months of injections and have been taking Neurobion daily. I have a healthy, balanced diet. What can I do?
Yeah, ask me an easy question, like how to treat a heart attack or how to treat a heart attack or something, right? So, shame. That's quite a difficult scenario. So the lady gives a very good history. She describes the features quite well. There are a lot of potential scenarios that can be causing that discomfort. You know, so the pain in the toes, we could be looking at something that's nerve-related, or we could be looking at something that's blood vessel related. And we could be looking at something that's a drug side effect related. So, for example, post the chemotherapy, we do sometimes see that. Certainly there are medications that can bring those nerve sensations, those nerve discomforts under control. And she might, actually her best advice is to go back and see her physician or the oncology doctor that was treating her originally, that is maybe a bit more familiar with those super powerful drugs that she would have been on, and then they can advise a particular medication to help reduce that side effect. That would be the best strategy.
Thank you so very much for that, Doc. Also to you at home, I want to remind you that it is your chance to keep those messages coming in on the WhatsApp line, asking about some free medical advice here on 072-567-1567. Standing in for Sarah J. You're also chatting to Dr. Charles van Lochenburg. It is 19 minutes before we get to 8 o'clock. Doc, another question coming in for you, but this one is specifically for me, and it's something that it's just a personal question, and it's about doctors. I've always wondered, do doctors get special training for not, I want to use the correct wording here, for not reacting interestingly to some of the things they see? I mean, I've had my tonsils removed and I've seen what tonsils look like. How does one just look at that and go, I'm okay, I'm just working here? And I've recently watched a video. I'm trying to use good language here because it's early in the morning.
I'm trying.
At this video, there's a lady who's got things moving on her hairline, and you can tell this head hasn't been washed in years, and these things are moving. And the doctor's just there, and he comments and he says, interesting. How? Is it something you're born with? Is it? What happens?
Great question. Yeah, I think, let's start, no special training. So tick that one box, scratch that one. So a lot of it is just about how the professional approaches the sort of patient presentation, right? A lot of it also depends on experience. So depending on what field you're in your training and in your postgraduate training, you will be exposed to different things. So you can imagine, myself as an emergency medicine specialist, my experience box is filled with all sorts of the weird things that arrive in the emergency unit. So that list is very long and startling. And I don't even get to the word interesting. I'll probably just go, right. You just take it with the flow. So it's really all about presenting a professional picture, professional response to the patient, because whether the patient's got funny little things growing in their hair or a weird question or a weird object in the wrong place, the list is just continues. You still have to treat them with professionalism, with respect, and make sure they're feeling that they're getting looked after. So looking startled is probably best left for the lunchtime conversation, right?
Because I'm thinking, if I saw that, I'd be calling my friends, you, come see this, guys.
Quickly, get your phone out, take a picture. Have you ever seen this? There can be some quite exciting ones. Usually, if it's adults, there's often a degree of sort of social embarrassment around it, potentially, depending on what the mechanism was. Some people are not aware of the situation, and then that's maybe a little bit easier. And sometimes it's kids, when it's often easier to handle. I remember one of our emergency units just the other day reported in they were getting advice on how to remove a difficult foreign body, which basically is something that's in the wrong place, right? And the child had managed to get a little toy soldier, if you can imagine, about 5 centimeters in size with a little base, a little sort of manny that they play with on the floor. The child had managed to get this toy soldier up his nose.
Yes, children.
Up the nose so that you couldn't even see it. The mom couldn't even see that there was a foreign body there. The child had obviously stuck it there maybe the day before, and they'd presented with this acute situation. Most interesting. So when we presented her with the toy afterwards, she was very startled.
It's like, I don't know what's wrong with my child. Well, Buzz Lightyear is busy trying to make his way into his brain.
Exactly,
so
right. That's fine. Exactly right.
Doc, I've got another question here coming in on the WhatsApp line. This one coming in from Mandy. Good morning, Doctor. In this hot weather, many menopausal women are suffering with hot flushes. Any advice for them?
Oh, you know, we're on a roll this morning with brilliant questions. Yeah. So for starters, you know, the classic menopausal hot flush, as most patients or sufferers might understand, is hormone related, not weather related per se, right? So it's an internal thing. They are getting disturbances in their temperature regulation as a function of their hormone cycle and their hormone levels going up and down in a manner that's not easy for the body to control. That being said, they feel discomfort in the environment. So the hot, humid environment will certainly make them feel a bit more uncomfortable, maybe make them more aware of the hot flushes. And honestly, the real strategy there is twofold. Number one, make sure you've chatted to your doctor and get a sense of whether your menopause is requiring symptomatic treatment or whether you're just going to, no pun intended, sweat it out, because often that's just what has to be done. And if things are in balance and you don't require any supporting medication, then it's really about just managing your environment, you know, so being strategic about cool environments, cool clothing, making sure you're staying well hydrated. You know, you love the hats, you love the sunscreen, you love the air conditioner, and you just don't put yourself under too much pressure. And it's just one of those phenomena that will resolve.
46 minutes after 7, if that's how you want to look at it, or I could say it is 14 minutes before we get to the top of the hour. It's your Q&A session with Dr. Shal, who joins you on the first Saturday of every month, talking about all of your medical issues. And the best thing about it is it's free. 072-567-1567. Send your medical questions in. Let's see if the good doctor can get around you. Second question, or another question coming to you, Doc. This is John in Bergfleet, who says, please ask if we are getting the new bivalent COVID vaccine anytime soon.
Yeah, good question. I hope so, is the answer. I hope so, John. So essentially, the bivalent vaccines, what we're talking about there is version 2, if you like, of the vaccine. So all of the vaccines that exist around the world at the moment have all been coded or planned or mapped, if you like, on an original viral strain, right? And over time, what happens, like in the technology of flu vaccines, the flu vaccines try and play catch up with the flu strains that are in the world. And so essentially vaccine technology with COVID is going to do the same thing. So we're waiting for the various manufacturers to effectively remap or recode the strains that are used for the new vaccine. And then we'll be getting that round of vaccines. So I don't have a date in mind. So the unfortunate answer is we don't know yet. As soon as they are available, we hope that the distribution will be effective around the world, and then we'll be able to get access to them. So for now, we're still using the vaccines that have been available for all this time up until now.
And then there's Andrew, Doc, asking a question I think we all wonder about sometimes. Hi, Doc. When you get ill, do you self-diagnose or do you go see another doctor?
Very introspective question this morning, obviously. The real answer is, I could give you two answers. The short answer is doctors never get sick. We just go to work, right?
Yeah, I like that.
And one of the wonderful advantages, in a weird sort of way, working in medicine is you're continually exposed to all sorts of infectious agents, right? So your level of bug exposure, if I can put it that way, is quite high. And if you're keeping yourself healthy, physically healthy, diet, exercise, all those good things, and you add that exposure, essentially my immune system or many healthcare professionals' immune system is under sort of a continual challenge to stay ahead of the game, right? So I think that affords you some degree of protection. But on the odd occasion when one does get ill, sure, if it's something obvious or something within your field, then a self-diagnosis is obviously pretty easy. And on you go, you can usually, you know, kind of what test you might have to pull or what imaging you might need. And it's only really when you head into a speciality that's outside of your wheelhouse that you'll consult a professional. And then it's probably about your network, you know, then it's like, hi there, John. Hi there, Jane. You know, I've got this situation. You want to help me out? Give me some advice. And in a collegial manner, you'll find a lot of healthcare professionals just support each other like that.
I can just see, I have this image of a doctor standing in front of a mirror, testing their pulse on their wrist and going, No, you're fine, Charles. You're fine. You're absolutely fine. Go get to work.
I tell myself that every day.
Another one coming in saying yogurt is supposed to be good for the gut. Is there any reason why it doesn't agree with me?
Yeah, nice question. So let's first clear up. There's yogurts and there's yogurts, right? So sort of your typical commercial yogurts that have got lots of sugars and colorants, etc. in them, they're not really of huge health benefit, and that's really just a dairy product with some sugar, right? In the more natural yogurts, the more active yogurts where you see on the container active bacilli or active bugs in some way that have been added, some probiotic type scenario, very, very beneficial for the gut. So the gut functions by having millions and millions of healthy bugs in it that help us to digest things. And when we add pro-bugs from foods like yogurt, we're basically adding to gut health. So yes, so the good quality yogurts, the natural yogurts, certainly good for your gut. If it's not agreeing with you, it's probably not the bug that's the problem. It's more likely to be the lactose, the actual milk solids that are in that substance. And this person might just have a gut sensitivity to dairy or milk products. And the easy way to test that is just remove those dairy products from her diet for a little while, see if those gut symptoms settle down, and then shift her diet into something that's a bit more friendly, a bit more lactose friendly, which in modern days we can do quite easily.
Another question saying, can the doctor please suggest something for restless leg syndrome? That's from Les.
Tough scenario. So restless leg syndrome, I suppose the way a general practitioner or a specialist neurologist would approach it is try and understand whether there is a cause. And often there isn't one that's obvious, but the type of causes we look to are, for example, underlying diseases that aren't well managed. We think of diabetics. We think of people with potentially nerve-related problems, maybe a history of trauma, sometimes a weird medication that you're on. It's a side effect of a medication for some other disease. But if we eliminate all those, and that's actually the small option, it boils down to really just trying to manage the symptoms. Some patients, we pick up a little bit of a metabolic disturbance in terms of certain vitamins and minerals that might be missing that sort of aggravate the situation. Think of someone who's predisposed to cramps as a different example. Sometimes they're a little short on certain electrolytes, which can be supplemented with good advice from a doctor or a nutritionist. But otherwise, there are certain nerve medicines, and we even use certain anti-epileptic medicines to help reduce the discomfort of restless legs. So if it's really bothersome for this patient, specialist consult would be what I'd advise, sort of move up from general practitioner to neurologist and maybe see if there's an anti-epileptic or a more sophisticated drug that that can be used. Tough symptom to have.
Liz in Hot Bay coming in with a question. Good morning, doctor. My husband has blood in his urine and is suffering extreme fatigue and brain fog. We went to a doctor yesterday and she sent urine for further analysis. Any clues what could be going on?
Yeah, lots of long list. Hey, good that they've been to the doctor. So good that they've picked it up. The fact that they noticed the blood and urine means sort of that it was what we call macroscopic, obvious. In other words, not hidden at a cell level. Long list of things that could be causing it. Could be blood related itself. In other words, relating to the breakdown of red blood cells in the body, which the blood tests will determine. And that will also contribute to that fatigue and the general not feeling well situation. It could be something as simple as an infection. We think of parasitic type infections, malarias, for example. Those are quite common and they can present with that sort of feature. Or it could be something kidney related, actually a renal related disease. Because the list is so wide, they're going to have to wait for the results of those tests, which should be quite quick, actually. A renal blood test we can get literally same day. So they're going to start getting some answers now and then steer it in the right direction. But good to have picked it up for starters. Very, very useful symptom.
And I do like the fact that, you know, for many of the people that are listening, Doc, and also from your advice, and it's an advice we've had every time, go to your GP. Go to your GP. Go see someone.
Yeah, go start. You know, the if it's urgent and if it's something that you feel can't wait or it's pain related, absolutely your emergency, your nearest emergency unit is the right place to go. If you feel it's not urgent or it's just a concerning symptom, then always try and access your sort of your primary gatekeeper in your healthcare world. And, you know, if you've got the privilege of being able to access a general practitioner, that's a perfect sort of place to start, you know, whether it's at a local clinic or your local GP, always good just to get that reassurance. And remember, in modern days, you don't necessarily have to go there. Sometimes you just need reassurance from a phone call. Maybe a telephonic consult might just be the reassurance or the push that you need to actually go in.
It is 5 minutes before we get to the top of the hour. You're listening to the voice of Dr. Shaul. We have the Q&A with him this morning, talking about things that are wellness, health, relationship, mental health, careers, and home. So you keep sending in those messages on the WhatsApp line. Doc, my son was diagnosed with Marfan syndrome. Could you offer suggestions as to the best way to manage this syndrome and any supplements to help improve his immune system? Thank you.
Oh, that one's going to be a short answer, really. So Marfan syndrome, sort of genetic predisposition, so the underlying, it presents with all sorts of different connective tissue and tissue-related disturbances. You get vessel issues, sometimes there's even heart issues, joint issues. There's a whole range of features that present with the syndrome, and it's really about how severe those particular features are. It's not a silver bullet in terms of treatment. So in this context, the treating specialist is actually going to be the place to start. There's absolutely not a sort of a one item off the shelf that makes things better here. It's really about identifying which is the most troublesome area that needs support, and then to go that route. Often it's about the doctor just explaining to the parents all of the different potential warning signs to pick up if there are significant problems, so that they can watch for them over time, and then they know when to shoot him back to the doc.
And then, Doc, I think this, I don't think this one is for you. Hi, Amps. Please thank Dr. Shaul, who's always helping people, not only on the radio, but in life. He is such a lovely, lovely man. Doc, that one's for you.
Ah, thank you so much. Such a pleasure to chat. Always a pleasure.
Doc, before we let you go today, though, any parting words, any sort of last advice from you to the listeners?
Well, I think we're heading into the festive season, really, and a lot of people are privileged enough to be able to take a short break. Kids may be away from school, that sort of thing. So maybe just to be sensible, make sure you've got sort of a good home first aid sorted out, so that if you've got any little minor problems, you can tackle them. And then otherwise, just to approach the December break with a sort of a measure of sensible, you know, let's not put alcohol on the roads and all those silly things, and let's make sure people can actually enjoy themselves in a nice, relaxed manner.
And Doc, I'm putting this question to you, and I'm putting it to the listeners. It's something we're going to be talking about in the next hour of the show. Okay, you at home, and you, Doc, I'm asking, if you were the president of the country right now, what would you be doing to ensure you deal with the stress that you're facing?
I'm just silent. You know, sometimes you plead the fifth. You just absorb. Just let it roll. Eh?
Let it roll. Just walk away. Wave and smile. Just smile and wave.
There's that wonderful kids movie, Frozen, I think. Yeah. Doesn't the little girlie go, let it go?
That's the one. Just let it go. Doc, thank you so very much for joining us on the show. Have a wonderful, wonderful morning further. That is Dr. Shaul van Lochenberg, joins you on the first Saturday of the month, that is December, just giving you some advice, free advice, by the way, on some of your medical issues that you're facing.